Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Politicians pore over them, journalists are sceptical of them, and the public influence them. But does anybody really trust them? We're talking about opinion polls, and in the run-up to a general election, they come into much sharper focus. So how much store should we put into those little snapshots in time? Well, Kevin Cunningham is a lecturer in politics at TU Dublin and founder of Ireland Thinks, and Stefan Muller is assistant professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. And they're both here to give us some insight into the whole polling process. You're very welcome. So, Kevin, you do this. You know how it works, and it might be worth you explaining to us how the process of polling happens.
Yeah, I guess it's, I mean, there are different methodologies, but it's very simple in terms of three processes. The first stage is you gather a group of people, typically 1,000 people. The second stage is you ask them hopefully clever questions. And the third stage is you actually make adjustments to that subset of people that you get. And those adjustments are based on, depending on whether you've gathered too many men, too many women, too many highly educated people, and so on. And those, each person is adjusted on that basis. The gathering people can be quite different depending on the methodology, and the adjustments can be different depending on the methodology. So, for example, I do face-to-face, telephone and online polling. You tend to get, like from a political context, slightly more Fianna Fáilers on the face-to-face, slightly fewer on the online, but you do adjust on the basis of other attributes that might correlate with voting behaviour. Mm-hmm. So, for example, face-to-face polling, it's a little bit difficult to get apartments. It's a little bit difficult, more difficult to get one-off housing because you're trying to get people, and you're also trying to get people who are in on the day. Online, obviously, you have people who are more likely to be online, and telephone has its own biases. So every single polling method has a set of adjustments, and those adjustments are increasingly important, certainly in terms of modern polling, which is more a kind of a lot about statistics and a lot about trying to understand and construct what you believe to be the perfect representative sample.
So when you say face-to-face, is that knocking on someone's door, or is it meeting them on the street? It's knocking on doors.
Knocking on doors, yeah.
Because you'll have politicians who say, oh, the polls we've seen recently, in recent times, involve a lot of online polling, and that's not really representative. That's what they will tell us here, that we shouldn't pay attention to them for that reason, that face-to-face is what you need.
No, I mean, there are, so as I said, every single poll that you do has adjustments, no matter what way you do it, because if I knock on a door, it depends on who's in at that particular time of day. Some people are very busy, they're less likely to be in, so everything requires adjustments. So really, the methodology is only important in terms of something called social desirability bias. So I think you have a slightly higher social desirability bias, which is where someone's going to say something, you know, that they may not necessarily believe, but they might slightly have a slightly different opinion if you're on the door. Now, that social desirability bias is actually relatively small. We're only talking about 2 or 3 percentage points. And generally speaking, it's on big issues. So at the Brexit referendum, we did that matched version where we knocked on people's doors and we texted them, and we found there was a difference in how people answered. Certain people who remain on the door tended to be leavers when we texted them at a different point in time.
Isn't that fascinating?
But it's a small thing. I don't want to overestimate it, because the face-to-face is also sometimes good for getting at certain areas. But again, a lot of those areas, people don't necessarily always answer the door. I've had a lot of doors slammed, or at least a lot of my team have had doors slammed in their face, and there is also a pattern to the way in which those doors have been slammed. They tend to be much more likely in the very socially deprived areas where people will just outright refuse to do the poll. So yeah, every poll has adjustments, and I think actually the most important adjustments actually concern turnout and how you deal with turnout.
Okay.
Because voters aren't very good at estimating the likelihood to turnout.
Before I come to Stefan, there was something that Willie O'Dea wrote in this week's Sunday Independent, which I thought was really interesting. I'm going to read it to you now. This is the Fianna Fáil.
I actually agreed with almost all of this.
Well, listen, let's bring it to our listeners. This is the Fianna Fáil TD, right? Fewer people identify as being of a particular party than before, and that's to be expected. He went on to say what might surprise folks is that some who strongly identify as being for one party vote number one for someone else. Without naming names, I know several strongly committed Fine Gael and Labour supporters across Limerick who, in the secrecy of the ballot box, have given me their number one vote. No poll, no matter how well it is framed, can allow for this. You agree with him there?
So I agree with the first bit. Yeah, absolutely. So when it came to the local elections, when we were asking people what candidate they were voting for and what party they liked, there was a difference. And the difference did help Fianna Fáil. It also helped Labour. And the reason for this, I believe, is because what happened to Fianna Fáil in the crisis period is that it lost its relatively weaker candidates, the ones that were running on the Fianna Fáil brand. You remember the Fianna Fáil logo shrinking in the posters mm-hmm. in that period. So the people that sustained and managed to get re-elected are genuinely very, very good Fianna Fáil representatives. The same thing has sort of happened to Labour. It's kind of called a survival bias where certain candidates prevail, I guess. And I think for Fianna Fáil in particular, they're getting a little bit from that Fine Gael vote in particular, where the Fianna Fáil candidate is stronger and a lot of people recognise there isn't much of a difference. But onto the point about no poll can do this. So at the last general election, we actually gave people the full ballot. We gave people exactly, here's a list of candidates from your given constituency and asked them to select things. And we actually slightly overestimated Fianna Fáil in the end. The polls that actually got the most, were the most accurate for Fianna Fáil in the end in that last general election were the ones that just asked the brand. And I think that was probably because when it came to the general election itself, there was a much stronger party-based rather than candidate-based vote. Now, we don't know whether that's going to happen for the next election, mm-hmm. but I have a suspicion that in 2016, it was also a relatively strong candidate-based vote that kind of fed into that particular election.
Okay, Stefan, for you, are opinion polls a reliable way of predicting what will happen in the run-up to the actual vote?
Well, opinion polls show support at a given snapshot in time. So if we take a poll today, we can't expect the poll to be accurate in a month or 2 months. It's a bit like a weather forecast. Huh? If you want to predict something further in advance, your weather forecast will be worse. But it doesn't mean that weather forecasts are useless, or even if the weather forecast is not completely accurate. So yesterday, it should have been raining all day in Dublin. It only started raining at 11 or noon. Does this now mean that we don't need weather forecasts? It's a little bit like this in polls. So as Kevin has said, I think it's good to mix different polling approaches, online, face-to-face and telephone, to actually see to what degree they correspond or to what degree they differ. And I think polls are really important for both voters, but also for media and for politicians. Politicians then often on air say they don't care about polls,
all
but
the
I think
time.
That's completely untrue. and there's lots of evidence that political parties and individual candidates field their own polls and they're very interested in it. What they probably are not that interested in is changes of a percentage or two, and then being asked on the radio on the Sunday in what direction the party is heading, if that's, you know, very small. So I think we should take a step back and treat polls a bit like a weather forecast for the coming day. It's often very, very accurate, but there might be some deviations.
Okay.
But it still tells us a lot about the current situation.
But you're German. I mean, how do you view how seriously we take polls here and the emphasis that we place on them? Is it different?
I think almost all democracies take polls quite seriously, and parties as well. You asked me about Germany, so maybe to give you one example, the Chancellor's office in Germany, so basically Department of Taoiseach, they conduct private polls every week. Every Friday, the Chancellor gets a private poll about what Germany thinks. And those polls were then released based on a Freedom of Information request a couple of years ago. And then researchers looked at the questions that were asked in those polls. And you clearly see that the Chancellor wants to know, first, what do voters think of their policies? So after an election, they ask much more questions about their priorities. What they said during the campaign is important.
The politicians' priorities.
The politicians' priorities, exactly. And then when we come to the next general election, they ask much more questions about policies that are, you know, perceived as important to voters. So it clearly shows that polls are very important for politicians mm-hmm. and that they are important for democracy
okay.
as well.
Can I go back to what you said there about, Kevin, about asking people about Brexit, you know, back in 2016, and they would say to you, face-to-face, was it? I'm going
face-to-face,
to vote Remain.
You're more likely to get a Remain vote, and then Leave was much more likely to happen in the online polls.
Yeah. Why? What is motivating people to lie about their voting intention? Do we know?
I don't want to overstate it, because it is relatively minor, and that was a particularly conscious issue. But I think it's what happens when... I mean, the secret ballot is secret for a reason. People kind of have motivated reasoning. If you go back to the 19th century, the shift in terms of people starting to vote for the Irish Parliamentary Party, I think it was, happened when the secret ballot was introduced rather than any expansion of the franchise. I think it's a matter of someone, you know, whoever depends on who knocks on your door and whatever it is, people tend to have different answers. I think it's slightly overestimated as well. But in some cases, people say that voters lie. Like, I've heard some narratives suggesting that voters lie when it comes to the idea that they want, in terms of tax cuts versus social spending, some people have suggested that people would actually prefer more tax cuts as opposed to increases in public spending. But I think sometimes those sorts of arguments are made from people who are maybe in the minority position rather than people who are in the majority position. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, it's hard to capture the fact that in some cases we have people on lower incomes who tend to want increases in services, and sometimes it's hard to capture the fact that there are lots of people on lower incomes. And that's just one question, but okay, there's lots of areas in which you have this sort of difference, I guess.
Well, let's talk about a time that the polls got it badly wrong. I mean, we have the most recent referendums in March, and it did look as though the women in the home element of what people were asked, that would comfortably pass, and in the end it didn't. So what is the explanation?
Yeah, for me that's clearly about late deciding. I think one of the times when you get a question, a survey question, and when there's more than 20% don't know, I think generally speaking, you're actually asking the wrong question, or you're asking a question that people can't actually respond to, because generally people try to answer, but then in that case, they didn't know. So what we found is, did a poll the week before, and it was a yes vote. It was a very small yes vote, but it was a significant yes vote over no. And then did the same poll on polling day, and it shifted dramatically. So it wasn't necessarily the mechanics. I think in that case, there's a lot of people deciding relatively late. And one of the interesting things about that one is because we were kind of predicting a no vote while also publishing a yes majority. Because mm-hmm. exactly as Stefan says, if you want to predict an election, it's not just the polls that enable you to do that. You need to look deeper into the motivations and the reasonings and differential turnout and all these other things. But the interesting fact that I discovered when I was doing this was when we asked people what they thought was important, what news story they were paying the most attention to, those that were no voters were overwhelmingly paying attention to the referendum itself. Those that were yes voters, almost none of them were doing so. The difference between those two, in terms of how much they were paying attention to the issue itself, the referendum, was massive. And one of the reasons...
But the tell was the don't knows, the size of the don't knows.
The size of the don't knows was another indication that people were generally uncertain. But I thought you have this then subset of the population that are focusing on this issue that probably in their little mini social networks were influencing people over the course of the week. And I think it's something like a lot of academics were trying to struggle what's actually happening in elections, because we have this massive volatility and these massive changes in voting mm-hmm. behaviour, not just in Ireland, but also in Germany, which we were talking about earlier, where the SPD surged quite randomly coming into the last German federal election. In the UK, it's happened as well. And trying to figure out what's going on is very difficult, but I think there's a possibility that you have people who are more engaged with the topic, who are influencing people who are less engaged. And sometimes when there's a big difference between those different cohorts, you can have this oversized influence. So I assume in some respect that those that were paying attention to the story of the referendum were influencing all these undecideds over the course of that week, mm-hmm. because we could see, I did some telephone polling during that week and I could see it breaking down throughout the week as well.
So it was changing late.
Oh, it was like right by the Wednesday, it was about 50-50 on the family one and 60-40 against in the care. And then by the polling day itself, it had broken completely.
Flipped again. Stefan, just going back to that Willie O'D example and people saying one thing and voting for somebody else when they go into the booth. I wonder, does it make sense then, using that example, to ask questions about individual candidates and constituencies? Or would that just be impossible to do? So we ask about the state of the parties rather than drilling down into the individual.
Yeah, I think as Kevin has said, you're doing this as well sometimes. So I know the Irish National Election Study 2020 asked in which constituency do you vote, and then gave the actual candidates as well. So it is certainly something to consider. And we know in Ireland, different again compared to other countries, candidates make a big difference. Of course, for local elections, we have seen that, but also for general elections. If you ask voters, like, why did you give your first preference to that person? A lot of voters say it's the candidate, a lot of voters say it's the party, and some say it's a mix of both. So it is difficult enough to disentangle this. But if we look at opinion polls, which usually ask for party preferences, and go all the way to the election day and aggregate those polls, we see that for local elections, it actually never really worked. So I've collected over 700 polls since the mid-1980s, and for each general and local elections looked how far were the polls off. And this year wasn't even an outlier. That's actually normal. It's ever since the early 1990s. It's just local elections are different from general elections. But if we move to general elections and look at the aggregates, we actually come quite close to the election results. So on average, if we look at the first preference vote share of a party and the poll of polls, it's between 1 and 2 percentage points away on average. Yeah? So a party that's 25% at the election, then in the polls might be 24 or 26.
So it's very close to being accurate.
You know, it doesn't always work, and there's differences across parties for sure. But if we just look at the numbers and the evidence, basically, since the, in that case, late 1980s, we see that the polls are not that bad. But if they are wrong, or if they're wrong for specific parties, that receives much more attention. Mm-hmm. But generally, overall, in Ireland, I think the polls are not bad.
So how do you explain that then, the accuracy rate when it comes to general elections and the problems then that you've outlined when it comes to the locals?
So for local elections, candidates and incumbency are even more important than for general elections. Again, Kevin mentioned that already. Often for local elections, you might not even see the party label, but you know that candidate because she is around for 15 years in the community and knocked at your door, and you don't really care what party it is because she fixed a pothole or she managed to, I don't know, repaint a wall or whatever it is. It's the small little things for local elections, and in incumbency has a huge advantage. I think, Kevin, you also did some analysis on this. Incumbency also plays a big role in general elections, but the party and party policies and national issues in particular are much more important. And I think that's the main reason for the difference. And in opinion polls, you ask for you ask how, like, who would you vote in the next general election? We don't really ask usually who would you vote for in the next local election. There are also some polls on this, but...
And even worse, you're asking, I mean, the standard question is how would you vote if there's a general election today? Which actually is a slightly flawed question because it deflates the number of undecideds and it kind of distorts things a little. And, you know, the other thing about polls is we always publish the results excluding undecideds and, you know, it's a... It's just kind of, those undecideds are not at random. Sometimes undecideds might be between two parties, which are very similar. Let's say they're undecided between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And then if undecideds collapse, then those two parties increase quite rapidly.
Well, is there evidence that the polls influence the voters?
Well, Stefan might have better information on this, but I remember there was a research done by Michael Marsh on this in the Oireachtas at one point, and his analysis was that it didn't. Now, I'm not sure. I think in some contests it does. When it comes to, like, I wonder whether in the presidential race, I don't know, Stefan, if you've got more information on this one, but in the presidential race and in sort of Republican primaries and Democratic primaries, I think there is a little bit of bandwagon effect. But if you look to the most recent election, I don't think there was in any sense of a bandwagon effect because the first polls that came out for the 2020 election had Fianna Fáil miles ahead and they kind of declined, and it wasn't really the Sinn Féin as the big story when those polls came out initially.
So Stefan, what are you seeing from your research? Do people want to be on the winning side?
Yeah, so there's two things. First of all, what we would call responsiveness. So voters respond to parties and the other way around, and polls play a role in mediating this thing. There is bandwagoning effects because you like to be on the winning side. It's the same as many aspects in life. There's a reason why so many people are supporters of Real Madrid or Barcelona because they tend to win titles. So if you see there's a trend, an upward trend or a downward trend, you're more likely to follow that trend. So I think trends are really important. And we also see that right after the 2020 general elections, there were some polls that had Sinn Féin on over 35%, because there was this surge in Sinn Féin, and there was maybe also the hope that there could be a new government, there could be like the wind of change. So a lot of voters immediately said, okay, now I actually vote for Sinn Féin, but it went down quite quickly as well. So I think there is some dynamics and bandwagon effects sometimes, and that's why we see trends.
All right, well, listen, thank you both. It's intriguing, and you may have a very busy time ahead.
Thanks,
in the short term. Thank you so much, Kevin Cunningham and Stefan Muller. Now, coming up, Maura Fey reports on the XL bully type dogs heading to Sweden before the restrictions come into effect here tomorrow.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.